The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast, Silicon VP edition. We're going to be talking about the latest episodes of Silicon Valley and Veep on HBO. As usual, I'm John Kissel here with Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
Jumping right in with Silicon Valley's episode of Blood Boy. In this episode, we see Gavin at the end of his rope, although Gavin should be, you know, vivacious and lively thanks to all of the young blood that he has pumping through his veins. This is really like the centerpiece of the episode, is Gavin's pursuit of immortality, and then gradually the show brings him down and down and down. From the silliness of that pursuit to him, you know, jumping into an airplane and flying away, fleeing the country, fleeing his infamous reputation, trying to find a new start. I mean, the Blood Boy is the fulcrum of the conflict in the episode. I don't remember what his name was.
It was a very white guy name. It wasn't Chet, but it was,
okay. Chet being, of course, the whitest of white boy names,
right. Yeah.
As we've previously established. He is giving a transfusion of his own blood directly into Gavin, while Richard is giving a pitch for their project for
Bryce.
Bryce, it's, yes, thank you. It, yeah, very much so.
Sorry.
Good job, Silicon Valley. You found it. And Bryce pipes up, agreeing with Gavin that they should do a giant launch with a lot of resources, because Gavin has a lot of resources and he knows what he's doing. He's been here before. Whereas Richard, understanding that the firm is only four people, that maybe it should be more of a stealth launch. And this causes Richard to go back and forth with Bryce, the Blood Boy, Triple B, as he likes to be called, about his place in Silicon Valley, how there's no niche for the handsome to fill there. It's run by the nerds for the nerds. And then
that was pretty funny when he went on the rant about young, handsome people being discriminated against.
Yeah, putting Richard on the defensive against someone who most likely shoved his head into a toilet when he was in high school. Richard goes on to expose Bryce the Blood Boy as a total fraud. His degree in CS is not computer science, but calisthenic science. He likes to smoke weed and eat the ding-dongs and the ho-hos that go along with your stereotypical weed smoker. And this leads to him signing a deal for a tell-all to write about his stint with Gavin, and then that is what leads to Gavin fleeing the country and screwing Pied Piper up, even though he does, in a final gesture of magnanimity, sign over the patent to them. But they are minus his connections and his money. It didn't really get as heated as I thought it was going to be in the saga of Gavin and Richard working together. I thought there was going to be a lot of backstabbing there, but it's been a bit of a redemption story for Gavin these last three or four episodes. And I think it worked fairly well as far as turning him into less the elephant-killing monster that he was in recent seasons into...
Sloth-throwing.
Sloth-throwing, sure. Thank you, Jared.
I think I'm kind of sad he's gone. Like, the show, you talked about the show as resetting. At this point, we really are back to square one.
Yeah.
No money and an idea.
Yeah, they are kind of back to the beginning, I guess, but wiser, you'd think.
I guess. It was just renewed for another season today. So, and we can be in this holding pattern forever of Richard coming up with an idea, a novel use for his algorithm, and then being thwarted until he finds something. Maybe he just leaves by the end of the season.
He thwarts himself.
Sure. Yes, he does. The Blood Boy to making the tell-all deal. But everyone else is just comfortable living with fraud and taking it, like, the Blood Boy is just another version of the guru and the security guy for Gavin, just someone that he pays to hear good things about himself. And it's all based on fear and greed. So I don't know which is better, honesty and misery versus, you know, willful blindness. He's flying off to wherever. I'm sure we'll see him again, but yeah, for the moment, it's back to square one with Pied Piper. Someone outside of Pied Piper for the moment, Dinesh, things have really come to a head with him and his hacker girlfriend. She keeps telling him things that she did, like giant hacker projects that she was able to pin on various spy agencies in the world. He's just very nervous about this whole thing. What can this person do to me? And he believes that the way out of their relationship is for him to tell her the truth about his tenure at Piperchat. But instead of being disgusted by his behavior and his potential exploitation of 11-year-old girls, she instead loves his honesty, and that just binds them further. So he does the only rational thing left, which is to rat her out to the FBI.
And it's great that she loves him, because of course she knew the entire time, because of course she knew the entire time.
Yeah.
She knows everything about him.
Yeah. Guilfoyle was right the whole time. I believe she said she spied on him that night after their first date.
It took a while in the bathroom.
Oh, yes, yes. While he was still with her, she was doing all this on the first date. So Guilfoyle was right. Dinesh was wrong. That old chestnut. But Dinesh does so aggressively and thoroughly sell the subterfuge at the wedding, where he takes an elbow to the face from an FBI agent that's hauling her away, that she'll believe him going forward. And he gets to quit Periscope and join up with Richard. Was there anything keeping him from quitting Periscope and joining Richard? Maybe Richard wouldn't have hired him while he had this black cloud of the hacker hanging over him.
Maybe there's no money in it.
Yeah,
pride. No money in it for.
Yeah, why? Yeah, why was that? I feel like
the way it happens in the episode, it seems like he needed to break up with the girlfriend first, and then the first thing he does is ask Richard for a job in a very unprideful way. Like, it basically, like, cheerfully, but begging, nonetheless. So I'm a little unclear on that.
I think it's just because they actually had money for a second there, and he thought they had money.
Okay, that all happens before Gavin tells them. Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah, I think I would buy that. Okay. Retracted. To the VC part of the episode, Ed Chen is continuing to weasel his way into Raviga, try and work his way up. He throws a baby shower for Lori. That is basically just the men in the office taking tequila shots and Lori sitting awkwardly off in a corner, having like presents more or less thrown at her. Ehrlich is also there with Monica, and he sees what's happening. He sees the potential takedown, the weak pregnant woman against all of these virile men. What is she doing leading us? And Monica, in a spasm of loyalty, brings that news to Lori. But she's been in the business for long enough. This is her fourth kid, somehow.
that's probably the best reveal of the episode.
I would probably agree with that. And she's wise to this nonsense. She saw it coming. Ed Chen does not have the numbers necessary. But even if he did, she is ready to move on to the next thing, start her own fund. And she invites Monica to come with her.
Which obviously you were looking at that intersecting with Pied Piper.
Sure. Yes, this could very well be Lori's first big project. I mean, she left it with Richard pretty badly, but so did Gavin. So these people are business. But
Lori's numbers.
Business types and numbers types.
She is not a ninja.
She is not a ninja.
She made clear.
Highlights from the episode would be when the garage opening, where they... beginning where they have like the trope of like every business begins in a garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a garage within a garage holding planes and multi-million dollar cars. Like Gavin just had that garage built. That was pretty quality.
Wasn't that someone's grandmother's house too? I forget like the exact lore behind that garage. Like it was right. Peter Gregory's grandma's garage or something. He just had it chopped off of her house. I'm sure he paid her a little bit, but she's missing a garage now.
Right.
Despite in his museum / hangar / giant garage.
Before I bring up Jared, because he's a highlight, so I had like a business complaint in that Richard talks about in his business he's got to get to critical mass, but he doesn't want to have a big launch. And you would think like with Gavin's popularity and a big launch, you would hit critical mass sooner. And so those two things don't make any sense. Like they... it was like a plot hole for me.
Maybe with tech, like if you have a shitty launch, you are forever poisoning your brand.
Yeah, I can see that. But it was like it was never considered. I don't know. I just thought it was weird. Anyway, the weirdest part for me was Bryce called Jared Donald. And like, do we know why? Do we know probably, that backstory?
Because that's his name.
Is that what Gavin calls? Because he calls Guilfoyle something else too.
No,
I think Gavin doesn't know his name, and Bryce is parroting Gavin.
In an earlier season, it's revealed that Jared's actual name is Donald, and someone started calling him Jared, and so he just went with it.
Oh, that's right. Okay, all right. You didn't catch that because they all said like, oh, I've worked with him before. How are you going? How's it going, Donald, or something?
Yeah,
it's been like a running joke that Gavin does not know Jared or Guilfoyle's name. So I that's what I thought. Gotcha. But that does sound familiar about Jared, even though I can't like pinpoint anything.
This is really it's odd that I remember more about this show than you do at times.
Probably.
This is weird because that literally never happens in any other show ever.
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to get into a quoting battle or a quoting game like I did with Deadwood about Silicon Valley. It's just not going to happen. Yeah, like when they start talking about software and the business, Brian, that you were talking about, I kind of zone out a little bit.
Oh, that's where I get terribly interested.
Okay. I can just feel my brain glazing over.
Right.
When he was talking about the value of the stealth launch versus the big launch, I mean, I get the scale of that, sure, but he was just rambling for like 30 seconds, and I was like, I'm not catching any of this.
I thought that was great. How about Jared saying the best part of having sex is the pillow talk afterwards?
Sure. Everything else is just foreplay.
Yeah.
Was that with in regards to the older woman he slept with to get his friend on the old person home waiting list?
Was that this episode?
That was this episode.
Okay. We gotta do these closer to the date.
Yeah, we really do. We should never go.
What else you got, Brian?
That's it. That's all my bullet points.
Okay. The only real world similarity, as usual, we have more of these for Veep than we do for Silicon Valley. Though that may change with future guests to Silicon VP. Who knows? Tech Titans and their life extension schemes. I feel like this is all born out of Ray Kurzweil's singularity, where there will be a point in the future where all of human intelligence is dwarfed by an AI. And at that point, brains can be just downloaded and transferred into a new body. And all these tech titans who are on the cutting edge of this theoretical existence want to make sure that they live long enough to see it. So that means crazy supplements and blood transfusions, which is, you know, a real thing, a real company out in Silicon Valley, and fasting and all kinds of nutritional schemes. Like Alphabet is putting a huge, they've started a huge division on life extension. Like Larry Ellison, founder of Oracle, is big into this. And Peter Thiel, who destroyed Gawker, is big into this.
I'm for that, for the destruction of Gawker, by the way.
Well, he's also a big Donald Trump guy. And, I know, and he's also for turning the FDA into Yelp.
Yeah, well, he's a piece of shit, but he was right on Gawker, and I will defend that, 100% defend that. No one needs to see Hulk Hogan fucking.
Sure. Does anyone need to drink coffee with butter? Because that guy thinks he's going to live to 180 years old.
I think actually it's not a bad option if you're going to go with like creamer or butter, where it's actually a good fat and actually kind of will keep you a little full.
But have you tried it?
I have not.
Okay. Brian?
I drink whole milk in my coffee sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's good too. Yeah. If you're going to do the milk, you want to go. Like, the point is, like, do something that's going to satiate you a little bit rather than just like giving you a buzz or the sugar.
Is it as simple as that, just the coffee butter thing? Because this guy like founded a company based around coffee butter.
Is it the Bulletproof?
Maybe.
Coffee?
I did cursory research.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that shit's all the brain stuff. That's all bullshit.
Okay, yes.
But I just think...
I thought Bulletproof coffee was like high caffeine. I don't think it was butter.
No, it's like a special oil or some shit like that. But I think the butter thing is just... I mean, it's not a fucking miracle.
I thought that was like a food trend, like good, avocado toast good, and not. Yeah.
Well, it probably. I mean, it's just good fat though. We're actually, it's kind of going.
But is it going to make? Is going to help him live far, far past?
No,
like
there's nothing that's going to do that.
Yeah,
Until we're able to download our brains, that's it.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to do it. Like Ray Kurzweil and his, he like takes handfuls of pills every day. Just every, and all supplements.
Is it wrong to get excited when these people die young?
No, I don't think it is at all. I think it's a little humorous, perhaps.
Yeah.
Like some of this is more scientifically based on other stuff. Like J. Craig Venter, who was the private side of the Human Genome Project, he has a whole boutique, whole body genome mapping thing that basically finds out every possible weakness you're going to have and then recommends ways to plug those weaknesses. Like, that's based on something, or at least our current knowledge of genetics.
Yeah.
The last thing about this life extension, mostly nonsense. Blood transfusions are, like I said, that's a company that exists based on no human studies. Mice studies, mice are not humans, no matter what kind of result they get. Let's reverse remember that. And it's also worth mentioning that these mice studies were minimally beneficial for the older mouse, and they were disastrous for the donor. So
it's basically the most American thing of all time.
Yes. Vampirically feeding on the blood of the young for a marginal benefit. So it sounds like a good way to go. Favorite moments beyond what we've already talked about, my joke that I'm going to call out is just Dinesh's joy at being elbowed in the face. Like, it couldn't have gone any better for him. I feel like there's a darker version of this episode where a guy named Dinesh grabs the shoulder of an FBI agent and is never heard from again. But it's just like, this is the end of that. He got exactly what he wanted. He got the black eyes to show how dedicated he is to his ex-girlfriend, and he's just in the clear, and I think he knows it. It's good to see him very pleased with himself for ratting out his girlfriend to the FBI.
I got all mine in there already.
Okay.
There's a lot. I think we kind of went over it with Jared, with the nursing home person. That was probably one of the better lines. I thought Lori was great this week, especially the ninja line. But I loved Ehrlich describing his stash and finish it off with, "I only need that one in case of an earthquake." What a ridiculous line.
And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Jared standing up to Bryce the Blood Boy when he starts to push back at Richard a little bit. Slowly rising out of his chair with the fire of 1,000 suns in his eye, ready to talk Bryce the Blood Boy into committing suicide at a moment's notice.
So did you, when Bryce first mentioned he had a degree in CS, did you really? I really thought it was computer science.
So did I.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I was fooled. Yeah.
I think that if the show had played that straight, that would have been something the show does on occasion. Like, give you the assumption that Bryce is just a physical specimen and a physical specimen only, and then reveal that he's like just flipping the world on his head. Like, outside in the rest of the world, he's valued, and inside Silicon Valley, the nerds are valued. But they flipped it again, and it was just calisthenic science, and he's a piece of shit.
It would be, before we move on, it would be a mistake not to mention T.J. Miller is leaving the show.
Yes, this season. Sure, yeah.
Who's T.J. Miller?
He's Ehrlich.
Interesting.
So, Agent of Chaos, I guess, but like controlled chaos. He kind of pushes things along.
They showed a preview for his stand-up before. It looks terrible. It looks absolutely awful.
I guess it just depends on what your mileage is with stand-up. I mean, it's the rare one that I really like. I like listening to stand-ups talk on like podcasts. Do I like their material? Not necessarily. I thought I would be going to a lot more comedy shows in Atlanta. I haven't gone to any yet.
We should.
So a lot more would be one.
Yeah, I thought I would have gone to one comedy show. Yeah. So I could have gone to more in Bloomington, honestly. They've got a fairly successful comedy club there. The Comedy Attic, I want
to
say.
I think I've only been to one with Blair one night, and I've been to improv a few times. I always love improv.
I'm more skeptical of that. I can imagine going there and not laughing at all.
Really? It's pretty good. It's almost always good. Have you ever been to an improv show?
I haven't. It seems like the capacity for it to be terrible is far more likely than the capacity for it to be good.
And well, that's part of the joy.
I like discovering a good show. I feel like good just improv just wouldn't show. be equal to terrible. It's got to be great or it's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just interesting to see people go off the cuff. And, I don't know, but we went to Second City over Christmas, and they mixed in a lot of the skits with the improv over 2 hour period. It was great. Mm-hmm. That was a great way to do it.
Sure, and they're like the masters. Yeah, I don't know what the Atlanta equivalent would be.
I mean, it's a pretty big city, so you're not talking like there are amateur nights, and then there are the like main cast nights. Not amateur, but like the students, the people who are going through classes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think we're going to do a fun for Brian just to go for one class to learn yes and. And so I'm pretty sure
this really raise our podcast game.
That's right.
Yes and.
Go on.
All right. So far, so good. Okay. Step one. Knocked out. So into the episode of Veep this week, entitled Cutter. This is revolving around Selena on the international stage. She begins at what, if I remember right, is a funeral for somebody. There, if it is a funeral, there's the pre-credits scene of her at, we'll just say a reception, being photobombed by the Sudanese dictator. And then at home, she gets the news that this photo is being reported on as a former president of the United States taking a picture with a war criminal. And she learns this at the same time that Catherine is announcing, at the exact same time that Catherine is announcing that she is pregnant with a splat baby. And this immediately puts Selena, the picture, not the splat baby, immediately puts Selena into crisis mode, where she needs to counter that with spending some time with a feminist activist. And she rules out several people, missing legs, acid-scarred faces, for a Sudanese woman who's an anti-female genital mutilation activist, goes to visit her. It goes badly. This woman is very much not interested in being used as a prop. Selena being there is an inconvenience to her. It puts her in danger, and the flowers that she gives her are useless. Can't water flowers if you can't water people. This opens up some possibilities for Selena, not so much her time with the activist. Nothing comes of that because no one's looking at the activist and no one's looking at the ex-president either. But the photo with the dictator, that raises some eyebrows in a financial sense, because the Qatari prince Jafar returns from last season. He helped broker the deal with Tibet. He's got avenues into China. And he, again, tries to serve as a bridge between China wanting resource access to Sudan and Sudan wanting more military equipment for which it can continue to commit war crimes. Pretty frickin' dark this week in V.
Yeah.
Selena's on board with all this stuff because she can extract public credit for the Tibet peace deal from China by setting this whole transaction up. Something that is the most important thing for her, to take credit from Montez and raise her stature on the world stage. So we're already in a pretty murky place. And then the episode continues. perhaps prodded by Selena, Montez also goes to visit the Sudanese activist, but she takes a soft stance on the Sudanese regime. This allows Selena to make Montez look worse by taking a harder one. She's going to give a big feminist speech pro women's rights at an Arab human rights conference. But she learns from Jafar that if she takes too hard a stance, everyone will walk away from the deal. So she has to stand at the podium, equivocating on female genital mutilation. So once we're in that very deep hole, we find out, of course.
You okay, Shane?
It was pretty brutal. I was done with the episode after that. That speech.
That was the end of the episode.
I mean, everybody
was done.
It's all revealed going, to be for nothing anyways, right. Because Selena doesn't get credit. The deal falls apart anyways because Selena wasn't complimentary to the dictator. And everything returns to status quo.
Which, of course, I don't want to plow through the female mutilation.
Let's call it FGM.
FGM. I don't want to plow through that because I thought it was a bit much. But it was also, Selena's really savvy at the beginning of this, and she does some great things, and it's kind of like, okay, this is why she's a successful politician. And then in the end, she's just shit on for no reason. It was like, it's like the end of the movie Dodgeball, where they have the, this is like the case of gold that he bet on. Okay, got it. Like,
she's too much. She's at her savviest when she's being transactional with the Chinese premier.
Yes.
Yeah, she just,
she's when being savvy. It was great.
But her that savviness is in use of creating this deal for China to extract resources and the dictator to get more arms.
It was a fucked up thing, but it was still something to root for. Like, oh, this person is somewhat capable. Now it's at the end of the episode, she's just shit on, and she had nothing to back it up with. I don't know. Like, you sold yourself out. It was a pretty brutal joke. It's pretty low, and I'm not someone who's going to sit there and say you can't joke about anything. You can joke about whatever the fuck you want. I don't care, but I don't know.
The joke is never on the activist. I think that's very important.
Right.
Like, she's the clearest thinker in the room, but she leaves the room before the speech is over.
Right. But if you're going to joke on something that heavy, like, it's got to hit, and I just don't fucking hit.
I think the joke very much hits around, like, celebrity advocacy type stuff. Like, we after Montez visits the activist, her village is flooded with flowers. Can't water them.
That's great.
Flowers rot.
That's great.
People die from the rot.
Specifically going in, like, who are we to judge about female FGM? Like, who are we, like...
Yeah, the joke is that that's a horrible thing to say.
Right.
Judge freely.
I get that.
And also that she's speaking to an Arab human rights conference with one single woman in it.
Right.
That also contains the Sudanese war criminal minister. Right.
And I get that. And I do appreciate where they're going, but it was just a step too far for me, where I'm just like, I'm done with this episode. It's just too much. Like, someone who doesn't I don't have a connection with Selena at all. I don't have a connection to the show because I'm a new viewer. So maybe you guys feel different. But, like,
Terrible.
There's nothing I can
get
behind.
She's being awful.
So it's almost to the point where if I weren't doing this show with you guys, I don't know if I'd keep watching at this point. I'd probably be done after last week.
I felt this episode and then, like, even if you include Richard, my favorite character, like, he had like 5 or 6 one-liners. None of them this week were any good. Maybe one where he says they're in Africa and he says it's magical out here. And then he said this goat has an ear infection. But, like, I thought that was fine. But
yeah,
he said a bunch of stuff that was just dumb and it wasn't that funny. I mean, Mike's whole phone deal in the background, just like whatever. I thought the whole episode was really flat.
Speaking of Mike, his
sunburn was good.
Sunscreen, yeah, that worked for me. Like, everyone is, and Selena looks behind her shoulder to see if any of her staff can help her, and they're like all holding up their hands to Mike's face, feeling the heat of his sunburn radiate off. And I thought that was great.
Yeah,
this is a classic Veep aside. I mean, it's one thing to argue that this episode was deeply uncomfortable and unsettling, which I would 100% agree with. Not necessarily, it's not the funniest episode that Veep's ever done, but I got a lot of good dark, I got a lot of good black humor laughs out of it.
See, the other thing was Furlong and Jonah.
Yeah.
And I hate Furlong as a character. Like, that, I feel like he's being more crude than any human actually is. And I don't get it. I don't think it's funny.
I think they're walking a path with Furlong that is just that is purposefully over the line as far as, like, his insults aren't necessarily as intelligent as some of the other insults on the show. He's just going for it with the vulgarity. Like, talking about his AIDS polypy uterus. Super mean. And it got a reaction out of these jaded, jaded polls and politicos.
I'm with Brian. The Furlong is probably my least favorite character.
I think that's fine and reasonable.
I get what it is, but it's not funny. I mean, it's just really, it's funny because it's so, like,
I think they don't want him to appear smart. I think they want him to appear just crude.
But he is smart.
I don't know that.
Certainly smarter than Selena. he's doing things. He's making things happen.
I mean, he's still in Congress, but it's easier to be elected to congressman than it is to be elected to president.
Yeah, but how could Selena be elected to Congress at this point if she wanted to? That she couldn't.
Well, no,
she's
but
she's so ineffectual. Like, there's nothing she could. Like, from what I've seen, there's just nothing that she does well. Nothing.
It's not like she was a fantastic campaigner. Like, she was in a Hillary Clinton type, where she was just, she's just not great at that, at the hand-to-hand politics stuff.
What is she good at this point in the show? Nothing.
From her political career, I think she would say people enjoyed having someone that looked like her represent them.
Okay.
But that's not flattering. Okay. Certainly.
Fair. There is a guy who body slammed a reporter who's probably going to win election night, so I guess that's as good as anything else.
Yeah, and it's not like Selena did demonstrate some savvy in this episode, but it's just, it all fell apart. There were probably times in her career where it didn't fall apart, where she succeeded in getting some stuff done, at least appearing that she got some stuff done.
Because even if you look at, like, negotiating to get the Sudan thing done, negotiating Tibet, negotiating that, her bill that ended up being terrible that she didn't want Jonah to vote for in the end. Like, mm-hmm. I think negotiation is her skill, like the political horse trading, like pork barrel stuff was her skill. And I think that's,
yeah, because she's where fairly, she thrives. She doesn't seem to have any kind of political compass, any kind of political goals beyond just self, whatever makes herself look the best. And if that can coincide with getting a bill through Congress, then all right, fine, whatever, who cares? You got to look good, and this bill got to be passed. Presumably a bill that, you know, does some good for people. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I think as far as this show is concerned, any achievements are likely poison pills that are much worse than they are sold as. You mentioned Jonah. He spends the episode using his relationship with Shawnee to get tiny cosmetic upgrades in stature. He gets to join the group of congressmen who previously froze him out. He gets a office that is closer to the ground, even though it's a little bit smaller and it has a worse view. It has a view of a dumpster where there's a pretty sweet chair that he is going to take home. And home, presumably he doesn't live in his office anymore either. Or maybe he does, and that dumpster chair is going to find its way into the Capitol building. So things continue to go well for Jonah, and things continue to go well for Dan, who is able to get his co-host fired for sexual harassment. And he is now the sole host of this show, while the co-host gets demoted to doing digital platforms.
I'm going to chime in here. This is where the highlights of this episode were. The thing where the HR lady is talking to her. Mm-hmm. And the co-host comes in and just basically verbally sexually assaults him in the room with the HR lady there. And HR people are just so to the point.
Humorless.
That was good. Yes.
Humorless, generally, I would imagine.
And then they make fun of digital platforms that they're going to send her
God,
back.
They say that with such venom.
Right.
Like, I worked so hard in my career, and one of the correspondents like, oh, yeah, you impersonated a homeless woman for that night, which is something that happens all the time.
Yeah.
I found Jonah naming his group. You mentioned that he joined basically the Libertarians is who he is now a part of.
Like the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, and they have named themselves the Jeffersons. With all the jokes about the old TV show moving on up and things
like
that.
It's unclear if Jonah gets anything. I don't think he does.
He has no idea. No
clue. He just happened to say, and we're moving on up, just totally organically. Like, he wrote the theme song by himself at brunch.
Oh, that was good. That was the best scene in the whole thing.
Speaking of libertarians, the libertarian in Montana got 5% of the vote. And, the non-body slammer in Montana is going to lose by less than that.
Okay.
It's depressing. Why?
I haven't seen footage of it. It seems
I just looked at the numbers.
It seems so jokey and barely real. I don't know. It wasn't so long ago in this country that people getting caned on the Senate floor. So,
yeah.
This is just who we've always been.
William Cutting murdering an Irishman.
Sure. Right. That's called the minority vote, I believe.
Yes.
A little Gangs of New York humor for those still paying attention. Plenty of real world similarities, as always, with this episode of Veep. Real world similarities often as depressing as this episode was itself. Roger Ailes, a grand scale piece of shit who has unquestionably worsened the country, recently died. Good riddance. But something worth mentioning with this talk of women newscasters is that something that he popularized was the leg cam at Fox News, where if you watched Fox compared to other 24-hour news services, you might notice that the camera is further back and thus able to capture the sweet, sweet legs of John Bolton and not Jeffrey Lord, he's on CNN, and Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. And, oh, excuse me, I meant the 20-something and 30-something newscasters that they routinely hire.
I feel like it's like, what are we talking about? Legs? What are we talking about? Is this risque for the Amish? Like, or like,
there's some 50-year-old dude in, let's pick a state at random, Arkansas, just furiously jacking it while Megyn Kelly is talking about atrocities in Aleppo
really
or something.
Looking at the legs.
Just, she's talking about the latest barrel bomb, taking out so many casualties, and that guy's hitting the mute button while the camera stays pretty far back so we can get the whole picture of Megyn Kelly.
Gotta get those legs. Gotta get the legs.
Yes.
Apparently.
He resumes to furiously masturbate.
Just legs.
The Sudanese dictator, who they name in the show, I don't remember what his name was, obviously inspired by Omar al-Bashir, the actual dictator of Sudan, who has been under warrant by the International Criminal Court since 2009. He is supposed to be arrested by all participating members in the International Criminal Court. He's visited several of those members since 2009 and continues to do so. He's been to China twice since then. Nobody cares. And he continues to starve out his people.
There is a... These guys have a great capability for more violence. So there is kind of this unspoken... Just like Joseph Kony, that whole Kony 2010, whatever the fuck it was. Like, people were intentionally leaving him alone because he started to leave other people alone for the most part. Like, he was causing much more damage and violence. And then when they're like, he stopped. And that's kind of why no one's going after him. Because kind of this, like, this deal, like, all right, knock it the fuck off. And we're not going to come after you. So there are certain things that's just not worth it sometimes. And maybe it's
worth
like, to go get this guy.
The African Union has pushed back pretty hard against the ICC in this scenario because I don't know enough about their motivations to be able to speak to it, honestly. Maybe they were trying to handle it in-house. I don't know. Things continue in the meantime. Especially when it comes to like what the activist is all about, FGM. It's one of the poorest countries in the world, which means that they're not going to have a giant stranglehold on what the smallest villages are doing. And what the smallest villages are often doing is might rhyme with nope.
It's crazy that
rhymes
you know,
with
like,
nope.
What, the second biggest continent out there
away from it.
With arbitrarily
dope. They're all doing dope.
I couldn't think of a word that rhymed with F.
Yeah. It's crazy that the second biggest continent out there, or is it the biggest?
It's the second.
The second biggest. That they with arbitrarily drawn lines is having problems unifying people.
I mean,
just like, hey, we went in there, we're like, hey, here's where your country is now. And they're like, what? And now, of course they have fucking problems.
There's some. So our next real world similarity, third of four. Just be patient, Brian.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to go play Overwatch for a little bit. You guys let me know when we're talking about what we've seen.
Okay. Selena speaks in front of that Arab Human Rights Council in the show, gets a fun aside about how semi-absurd such a statement is, or such an idea is. The current countries on the UN Human Rights Council would include China, Congo, Cuba, Egypt, Hungary, Indonesia, Philippines, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, among several others, and the US as well. So it's not like membership on these kind of councils has anything to do with what your country feels about human rights, especially in this country where Trump is on this Middle East trip, has said that we're not going to lecture other countries anymore about whether their women should be allowed to drive, for example. So I like global institutions, but Jesus Christ, they're laughable sometimes. So our last real-world similarity. Gary invokes Princess Di when Selena is surrounded by all these landmines, and Brian, you can jump back in here. I have never understood the appeal of Princess Di, and I'm wondering if you guys can help me out here.
I don't get
what
it
was
either.
So awesome about her?
It's what Lonely Housewives were into before.
Is it just the princess
internet
thing?
She wasn't born into royalty, I think, was the thing. Like, it was like a common person.
I have no idea.
I don't even give a fuck. I don't give a fuck who she married or why she married Prince Charles or whatever. Who cares? I don't care about the royal family.
I don't get it.
The dumbest fucking thing. Anyone who spends their time on it is a sad person.
I'm sure she left plenty of flowers to rot in an African village that didn't have the water to keep them alive.
I do believe she was a pretty solid humanitarian, though. It's not like she's an awful person or anything. I mean, focusing on the royal family just to focus on the royal family is just fucking sad.
It's all cause it. Like, she, I guess, was able to use her place in the royal family to shine light on certain causes, landmines in particular being her big thing, and I want to say Southeast Asia.
So I was showing my knowledge of pop culture. Diana was born into a family of British nobility with royal ancestry. So okay. I was right on saying she.
Now, Prince William's wife, she is from a wealthy family who made their money selling like plastic party supplies.
Oh.
So that applies to her. You might have just got your British princess wires crossed, Brian. Yeah. You're off by generation. You're in the ballpark.
My only thing, the new one, I don't know her name, but like, she has been pregnant at the same time as Chelsea, and all I hope every time is that they don't name their kid what we're going to name ours, because I would be devastated.
If they named their kid Foster Hartman, I would have been shocked. Jeff announced that Jane in an adorable thing at bedtime, announced that Jane and Foster, Brian's children, are good and that they're his friends. It's pretty adorable.
What a sweet kid.
Yeah. I just can't believe it's been over a year and he still remembers that. It's nuts. Kids are weird.
Can he bring it up unprompted?
I showed him a picture and he's like, Foster, he's good.
Okay. Favorite moments. Julia Louis-Dreyfus always has a way with an outburst, and this episode is no exception. Her getting the news that Catherine is pregnant at the same time as she sees the picture of her with the dictator and responding just perfectly timed once Catherine, you know, gets the words out. Fantastic. Love that. And no one else in the group cares either except for Richard, who says to Catherine, now I can stop masturbating. So no one in particular, really. So Richard got nothing out of this experience besides a daughter. He's not going to change his life or anything. He's more friendly with the devil's handshake now, but he's going to go and put that back in the cabinet where it belongs. Shane, favorite moment from this episode of Veep?
The background shirts are on point. The Jonah Ryan shirt, one of the extras. Pretty solid.
Brian, any favorite moments to speak of in this episode of Veep?
Besides the Jeffersons, I had a note here where Kent corrects some. I don't remember what they're talking about. It says it's aisle, not island.
Yes, I remember that.
What is the reference in that?
I can't remember.
I can't remember.
But it is like a common saying.
Yeah.
So there you go. Whatever that was, it was so memorable of an episode that we know exactly what it was about.
Who won the week? I'll let you guys start.
Silicon Valley. By far.
Brian, is a dark horse going to come out of nowhere and steal the victory from Silicon Valley? Did you see a good preview?
I watched Get Out this week. That was okay. So much better than anything I've seen in a long time.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it's very good. That was a good movie.
So we're going to talk about that as soon as we wrap this up.
Okay, I still don't think Silicon Valley is as funny as it has been, and I think Veep just got in some fucking deep cuts about the realpolitik of its world and the real world as well, while also being pretty damn funny. So Veep takes the week for me. Get Out's on the board, along with the Bernie Madoff trailer. Did you ever watch that, Brian?
No, I saw it when I went to watch The Wire on the bike the other day. What I end up turning on, I watched like 10 minutes of Suicide Squad, and then I shut that shit off. That was terrible. You're
probably right to do so.
It doesn't get any better.
Oh, man.
It doesn't get any worse either. So, it's, to be fair, it just stays that bad.
Okay. So, I thought, I mean, these were dark, or at least the Veep was a dark episode that has put a damper on how we view the world, but certainly on this episode of the Media Movie Club podcast. So let's brighten it up with your favorite segment, Brian. What have you been watching?
Yes. You guys can go. I already told you what I've been watching.
I plowed through a few episodes. I completely forgot last night that I had not finished American Crime Story, O.J. Simpson. I plowed through a few episodes last night. It's fantastic. It's really good.
A very slow, elegiac ending with O.J. and just realizing how different his life is going to be from now on.
I haven't got that. I just said I plowed through a few episodes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you got to the end. Never mind. Spoiler, O.J. gets off at the end.
Okay. Oh, Jesus.
It's not an Inglourious Bastard style rewriting of history, sadly. Tampon purchases?
I don't remember. Oh, I think God. I watched that a couple months ago.
Thank you, Shane. Brian, what have you been watching?
I just said I watched Get Out, and that was really good. But I do want to talk about, have you both seen it?
I have,
no,
yes.
I have not.
Oh, Shane, you don't have to leave. We'll save it for next time. I'll remember it.
Okay. I watched Bad Moms earlier today.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. It was a good premise, at least. Like, I'm coming from, like, a skeptical perspective, like, you know, making moms feel bad about themselves for specious reasons and causes that are utterly unproven and unknown.
Sure.
I'm all about that. That seems like a giant waste of time and energy to me. And if a mainstream successful comedy could take the piss out of it a little bit, then fuck yeah. But sadly, it was just too scattershot. Like, it has to improve. It doesn't have to just improve the main character's relationship with her children or how she sees herself as a parent. It also has to improve as has to deal with her marriage, has to deal with relationship to the school, relationship to the PTA, and her relationship to her job. There are some really funny parts in it. Catherine Hahn is in stepbrothers mode, where she's like a extremely sexual party type person, party animal. And Kristen Bell is in there being believably bashful. But, I mean, it's a movie about moms and women, almost a solely female cast made by the writers of The Hangover. So maybe they weren't the best mediums to get that message through. A missed opportunity.
Claire and I actually saw a bad mom drop her child off for a baseball game tonight and sit in the car and smoke weed right in the street in front of everybody. Everyone's all the children's parents and shit tonight. That was depressing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even give a fuck you smoke weed, but like right in front of your kid, come on. And park the wrong way on a street, like you can't park the wrong way and then do that. It's like now you're getting arrested
really,
in front of your kid.
You're really putting a siren on the top of your car when you're doing that. Like, everyone look at me.
Yeah. Like, come on.
The bad mom type in Bad Moms. Like, they weren't actually neglectful or negligent.
They just weren't dumb moms.
They were feeding their kids gluten, for example. Mm.
Right.
That type of bad mom.
All right. I'm more inclined to watch then.
Not forcing themselves to make their kids breakfast every day.
Like,
a 10-year-old can pour himself a bowl of cereal. It's not a big deal.
We have too many mimosas.
I forgot we had our annual take students to the movies, and we saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I was 2 for 2 this week on good movies.
Nice.
Yeah, that was good too.
Do you have to take like special precautions to take kids in?
Yeah, if it's PG-13. Yeah, if it's PG-13, all districts are like this across country.
Okay.
If it's PG-13, you're taking kids that are 13 or younger, even in high school typically, you have to send a permission slip home.
Okay. What was that experience like?
That's fine. We do it all the time. It's opt-in.
But like a movie theater packed with your middle school.
Oh, teenagers? So it depends. Like last year, I sat in front of some kids who had to make a comment at every single scene. Mm-hmm. And this year, like,
good comments or
no? Useless comments? No, just irritating. And then this year, I was behind in front of kids that were quiet and laughed at funny stuff, and it was great. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah,
check out my review, Brian, and listeners of Guardians of the Galaxy 2 on MediaCommovie.club. Anything else for this week, guys? Before we wrap it up.
Shane, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet?
I'm not.
Oh, my goodness.
I have a newborn, Brian.
I know. Well, get out. You could.
I mean, how many teenagers equal a newborn at the movies? Like, the level of...
You're probably right.
The level of...
West would probably be better disruption. Than that. They would probably be quieter.
Yeah.
The we were on the bus on the way to the movies, and one of my students was asking me if I've seen this and this and this, and my answer to most of them was yes. But I had to tell her I'm not allowed to ask. I couldn't ask her about anything because I didn't know the ratings of the movies. And the last thing I need is a phone call from mom and dad. Why did you bring up The Godfather with my 13-year-old daughter?
Because she looked like an intelligent person who cared about cinema. I mean, come on, parents.
Yeah. I mean, I know her parents wouldn't have said anything, but like she was bringing up like Hush and she brought up Wolf of Wall Street. I said that's not appropriate for adults. We are absolutely not talking about that movie. So
I'd probably try to talk to her about it.
There was
I like to assume people are smart before they reveal otherwise, you know, and that girl, the same rules would have applied to her. Where we could have talked about predatory capitalism and how we turn a blind eye to it until she talks about snorting coke out of, like, what was Leonardo DiCaprio snorting out of that woman's butthole? When she asked that question, I'm like, all right, fine. If that's the way that we're going to talk about this, then I guess we can't talk about this.
Mm-hmm. John, I think if you talk about those things with 14-year-old girls, you go to jail. You're not.
Well, sure. Not predatory capitalism, though. I mean, she brought it up. It's a great movie. It's like it's one of the best movies of the 21st century. I mean, if I'll talk about it with whoever, talk about a 12-year-old even, Brian.
That's bold. It's very bold.
As long as we're not talking about snorting coke out of prostitutes' buttholes, I think
there you go.
That's the distinction.
That's the line. That's the line.
Or whether Jonah Hill's dick was real or fake in that movie. I mean, you know, I'm not an idiot.
Right.
So.
I had like multiple students bring up the Babadook to me.
Like, I mean, that's more intense than like gory or anything.
Right. No, they all loved it.
I mean, faith in the next generation.
Right. There you go. Original screenplays.
Absolutely. Supporting female filmmakers. Small budget movies.
There you go. Yeah.
Good for them. So that'll bring us to the end of this episode. Again, I loved Veep this week, but I think it brought us down a little bit. We'll try and get the energy up for next week.
Yeah. Maybe I should do this a little sooner.
Brian.
Yeah, that's totally my fault. I had end of school. It's a happy time around here.
Good for you. Good for you.
You mean all those teachers who told me they were so sad that to see us go for the summer and they wouldn't be in, and we wouldn't be in our classrooms next year. They were lying to us the whole time. They were just waiting for the margarita party that was happening in a half an hour.
My students asked me, Mr. Hartman, will you miss me? And to every single one of them, I say, I miss all my students. As politically correct as I can be.
What if you said, I miss all my students equally?
Sometimes they say that as well.
Okay.
It just depends on who it is.
They don't know that, you know, zero is a number.
They do know. They absolutely, they're like, oh, well,
if that they doesn't don't, mean anything. Them next year. So.
Yes.
Okay.
There we go.
Check us out on the internet, MediaCommovie.club. Like us on Facebook, MediaCommovie Club. On our website right now, we are discussing Sunset Boulevard. We've got broadcast news in the hopper. That'll be coming up next week. Follow us on Twitter at MediaCommovieCole. Check us out on iTunes. 5-star reviews are always helpful. If you're buying stuff through Amazon, maybe click on the link on our page and help us bring this sweet, sweet content.
And you can follow me on Twitter, Tim's Neighbor.
Yeah, let's start doing that. Follow me on Letterboxd at John_Kissel.
Hartman does not want to be followed on Twitter.
I don't. John, you should just take over our Twitter account so that you have one.
I probably should do that.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
Clean that bad boy up.
For those that follow us on Twitter, if we suddenly start tweeting a little bit more often about more obscure filmy things,
I think that would be great for us.
Yeah, yeah. Let's look into that.
Yeah. All right. At least one good thing came of this pod.
Thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
All right. See ya.
Good night.
Yeah. So I can mail that one, guys.